intriguing, and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
Radio. Revolution Radio brings you a platform unlike anything on the internet today. A place where voices are heard, ideas are shared, and friendships are formed. So why not join the information revolution at freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
It's great. In your mind, does the world seem inverted, backward, dissonant? Dare to think out loud. You see your rights, freedoms, your very way of life being attacked, systematically eroded. Dare to think out loud. You observe traitorous evil rewarded, stealing the future from your children and grandchildren. Dare to think out loud. You question all the jingoistic propaganda claimed to be history. Dare to think out loud. You have tuned in to the right show. Dare to think out loud. Here's an expert on original source true history, your host, the Rebel Madman, Michael Gaddy.
Well, hello everyone. Here we are on Friday, the 28th of May in the year of 2021, and our program is Dare to Think Out Loud, or, you know, just Dare to Think. I am joined today on our program where we will delve into the writings of one Samuel Bryan, an anti-federalist who wrote under the name Sentinel. And I believe, no proof, but it's just my belief after years of study, that he also very possibly could have written the one anti-federalist paper under the name Montezuma. Well, today I am joined by my good friend Cal Robbins out there in good old Arizona. And I do believe that Cal is celebrating his 39th birthday today. Is that not right, Jack Benny? Uh-oh, he's muted and saying nothing.
I'm here. I'm here. Yes, Alfred. I'm a day older, so yeah, I'm losing my mind already. Yeah, it's my 20th anniversary of my 39th birthday
today. Oh, fantastic. I enjoy doing shows with you younger folks.
I think so, I'm the baby of the group.
So how are you doing today, Dave?
Doing good, guys. And Cal, that's funny. You're I like the way you phrased your birthday. That's good. Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you, Dave.
Oh, so Dave, how about let's get started. You telling the folks, number one, about your program that will be coming on tomorrow, and number two, how they can donate to this effort and this platform in free speech.
Absolutely. Well, you know, my show comes on tomorrow, Operation Scorpio, from 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A. And I think what we're going to do is sort of just run a roundtable and just see who calls in and where the conversation goes. So, going to invite all kinds of people to come on and just let a little random chaos happen and see where the conversation takes us. Oh. And as far as Revolution Radio, guys, everyone knows that free speech is under attack everywhere. and it's all around us. So come aboard revolution.radio or freedomslips.com. That's freedomslips.com. And click on the Patreon link there and become a Patreon member and try to give a little something every month to show that this station is bringing value to your life. You know, all the hosts are doing their shows without pay. And so the management, the technical people, everybody are doing this without pay as well. So the people behind Revolution Radio are really trying to get information out there to help people see what's coming. So please come aboard and help keep this going, because without the proper funding, we can't keep the platform running. So everyone remember that and do what you can.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate that. And we were expecting our good friend from Alabama, Jamie Bell, to come on and sing Happy Birthday to Cal in his best Marilyn Monroe voice. But evidently he has declined, Cal. So we
That's
shall
probably
have...
for the best.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be great to have Jamie on here. But yeah, it's probably for the best.
Oh, well, Dave, before we move on further, how are your plans proceeding about getting back here to the good old 50?
Everything's moving along, Mike. I'd say my goal is I'm going to be out of here sometime in June. So I'm down in the last couple of weeks of work, and then I'm going to get a ticket and head on home before it's too late, because I do think the restrictions of travel are coming, especially for those who refuse to take the experimental medical protocol that they're calling a vaccine.
Oh, without a doubt, I could not agree more. And just so long as you're here for the Alabama Rebel Hoedown, you're fine.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that, definitely.
That should end up being fun. Cal, you might have to come to that as well, buddy.
I heard about that. Yeah, I might have to just make it out there to that.
Oh, well, that would be fantastic. I would love to see as many of us like-minded folks as possible. You know, all of us terrible conspiracy theorists to all get together in one nest, you might say, at least for a few days to exchange ideas and actually get to meet each other face-to-face.
Sounds like a real good time. I just got to figure out how to get through New Mexico.
How to get through it?
Yeah, I guess I just don't stop, because apparently they still cracking down on everybody.
Well, yeah, they've got that wonderful socialist governor who just really shut down the state in so many ways. Well, you know, gosh, you could say that for about 40 states, the wonderful socialist governor, couldn't you?
You'll have to go around it, Cal.
Well, then he would
That's
have
a pretty
to go,
good detour from here, then, to go around it.
Then he would have to go through the socialist state of Colorado.
Yeah.
So not much help there. Probably, Cal, when you hit that good old New Mexico border, out there in the western border, just close your eyes and keep driving.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'll just have to make a whole day trip through New Mexico, make it into... What's next? Texas,
yeah. Just go right on through.
Then I can stop, yeah.
I think it's about 348 miles across the state on 40.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Or 360, somewhere in that neighborhood anyway. Well, one of the subjects we're going to broach today with Sentinel is his exposure of the massive fraud that took place during the American Revolution that most folks have never heard of. And it was perpetrated by one Robert Morris and his group of merry bandits, including Alexander Hamilton, James Wilson, Gouverneur Morris, and several others, Richard Peters, several other folks who managed to make themselves just uncommonly wealthy during the war. And, you know, how does anyone become wealthy during a war? Well, we're probably going to get into that, but... Cal, are you all set to jump in on Sentinel 16?
Sure.
Well, let's start out by reading maybe the first paragraph, and maybe that will help. To the people of Pennsylvania, fellow citizens, The new Constitution, instead of being the panacea or cure of grievance so delusively represented by its advocates, will be found upon examination like Pandora's box, replete with every evil. The most specious clauses of this system of ambition and iniquity contain latent mischief and premeditated villainy. Now, here's a critical one right here, folks. By Section 9 of the first article, no ex post facto law shall be passed. This sounds very well upon a superficial consideration, and I dare say has been read by most people with approbation. Government undoubtedly ought to avoid retrospective laws as far as may be, as they are generally injurious and fraudulent. Yet there are occasions when such laws are not only just, but highly requisite. An ex post facto law is a law made after the fact, so that the Congress under the new Constitution are precluded from all control over transactions prior to its establishment. This prohibition would screen the numerous public defaulters, as no measure could be constitutionally taken to compel them to render an account and restore the public monies. The unaccounted millions lying in their hands would become their private property. Hitherto, these characters, from their great weight and numbers, have had the influence to prevent an investigation of their accounts. But if this Constitution be established, they may set the public at defiance, as they would be completely exonerated of all demands of the United States against them. This is not a strained construction of this section, but the proper evident meaning of the words, which not even the ingenuity or sophistry of the Caledonian, meaning James Wilson, can disguise from the meanest capacity. However, if this matter admitted of any doubt, it would be removed by the following consideration. Reads that the new Constitution is founded upon a dissolution of the present Articles of Confederation, is an original compact. Holy moly, let me slip over here to my next page. A compact between those states, or rather those individuals who accede to it. Consequently, all contracts, debts, and engagements in favor or against the United States under the old government are canceled unless they are provided for in the new Constitution. Well, that's as far as I'm going to go right now, Cal. We can pick that up later, but what are your thoughts so far?
Well, Sentinel Samuel Bryan, he's pointing out that there's huge debts of millions of dollars owed to the U.S. government, so to speak, which is, you know, to the people. These people, in crafting their constitution, have written it in such a way as that they will not owe that debt. They're exonerating themselves from the debt that they owe.
Well, I think it's critical. I think it's critical that the people who have stolen this money are all in Philadelphia writing a new constitution, or at least a majority of them, not all, that would be wrong. At least a majority of them are in Philadelphia helping to write a new constitution.
No, that's exactly what's going on.
So would we and including Sentinel, would we be wrong in thinking that they are there to create a constitution that would cover their crimes?
No, that's what they were doing.
Well, okay, let's move along, because here
it also points out that because they're so they hold so many positions of power that any investigation into it has been stymied, because there had been people, you know, look, wait a minute, there's money that's supposed to be owed here, but any time they looked into it, people like Wilson, the Caledonian, would distract from the arguments, so to speak. They would hide it.
And Richard Peters did all he could in the courts of Pennsylvania to keep that from coming out as well.
Exactly. Let's continue. You do that. I'm going to see if Richard Peters is on that list of shareholders I have.
Of shareholders? Yeah, that's a good idea to check on that, because I feel probably confident he was on that list.
Yeah, go ahead and keep going, Mike. Where'd my notes go?
Okay. All right. The framers of this Constitution appear to have been aware of such consequence by stipulating in Article 6 that all debts contracted and engagements entered into before the adoption of this Constitution shall be valid against the United States under the new Constitution, but there is no provision that the debts, etc., due to the United States shall be valid or recoverable. I think that, too, is a huge point. Is who writing up any type of business arrangement would say, okay, all of the debts that we owe are valid, but all of the debts owed to us are not mentioned. Could it be because the people writing the Constitution were the ones that owed the money to the government? I think that's certainly possible. Dave, what do you think, my friend? Uh-oh. Well, Dave is either muted or he has gone afar doing something else at the moment, and that is certainly understandable. Cal, have you been able to find Mr. Peters?
No, he's not on my list. In fact, this Mr. Peters character, I believe the first time I really became aware of him was this morning on a post you had on your group teaching site mentioned. So I have not had a chance to look into this Peters. What's his first name?
Richard
Peters. Put that on my another rabbit hole. Thanks, Mike.
Some interesting things we'll get into later in the Bill of Rights between this Richard Peters and James Madison. Richard Peters was absolutely irate that Madison would even consider putting a Bill of Rights to this Constitution. But that being said, let's move along here with the sixth article of the Constitution that says that all debts due to the United States shall be valid or recoverable. No provision that they will, but all of the provisions that everything they owe should be paid. This is a striking omission and must have been designed as debts of the latter description would naturally occur and claim equal attention with the former. This would naturally occur and claim equal... This article implied cancels all debts due to the United States prior to the establishment of the new Constitution. If equal provision had been made for the debts due to the United States as against the United States, the ex post facto clause would not have so pernicious an operation. The Immaculate Convention, that is said to have possessed the fullness of patriotism, wisdom, and virtue, contained a number of the principal public defaulters, as we have mentioned earlier. And these were the most influential members and chiefly instrumental in the framing of the new Constitution. There were several of this description in the deputation from the state of Pennsylvania, who have long-standing and immense accounts to settle, and millions, perhaps, to refund. The late financier alone, he's talking about Robert Morris, in the capacity of chairman of the Commercial Committee of Congress early in the late war, was entrusted with millions of public money, which to this day remain unaccounted for. Nor has he settled his accounts as financier. The others may also find it a convenient method to balance accounts with the public. They are sufficiently known and therefore need not be designated. This will account for the zealous attachment of such characters to the new Constitution and their dread of investigation and discussion. It may be said that the new Congress would rather break through the Constitution than suffer the public to be defrauded of so much treasure when the burdens and distresses of the people are so very great. But this is not to be expected from the characters of which that Congress would in all probability be composed. If we may judge from the predominant influence and interest these defaulters now possess in many of the states. Besides, should Congress be disposed to violate the fundamental articles of the Constitution for the sake of public justice, they would be prevented in so doing by their oaths. But even if this should not prove an obstacle, if it can be supposed that any set of men would perjure themselves for the public good and combat an host of enemies on such terms, still it would be of no avail, as there is a further barrier interposed between the public and these defaulters, namely the Supreme Court of the Union, whose province it would be to determine the constitutionality of any law that may be controverted, and supposing no bribery or corrupt influence practiced on the bench of judges, it would be their sworn duty to refuse their sanction to laws made in the face and contrary to the letter and spirit of the Constitution, as any law to compel the settlement of accounts and payment of monies depending and due under the old Confederation would be. Cal, any thoughts, my friend? Oh, okay. Well,
I'm not sure. Cal, are you there? He's not showing.
It's a birthday, man. I'm allowed this kind of mistake. I'm getting older.
Okay.
They were just saying that these people are exonerating themselves. They're actually writing a law to exonerate themselves from only owing any debt. It'd be like if you owe money to the bank, you could just write a law and say, "Oh, I don't owe you money anymore." It's basically what they did.
Well, that's a very good way of putting it. Dave, what are your thoughts, my friend?
It's just interesting to hear, you know, sort of a firsthand account of how, you know, this banking game was played back then and how it's very similar to today.
Can you wonder now why the 21 essays or 24 essays, I'm sorry, 24 essays of Sentinel will only cost you about $900 at Amazon?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And here is someone who I think just perfectly lays it out, because he says that number one, let's try to break this down. Number one, they have written a constitution. The people who owe money to the government are sitting in a convention writing a new constitution. So number one, they put in a law that's no ex post facto laws. So even if they did not win the majority in the first government under the new constitution, no laws could be passed to make them pay the money. No criminal charges, no laws could be made that would establish them as criminals stealing money from the government. Number two, they put an article into the constitution which says that only the debts that the government owes are valid. No debts owed to the government are valid. That in itself should just wake up, even Rip Van Winkle. So there we have those. And then Sentinel moves into the fact that if those two provisions should fail, that we also have the Supreme Court in place to protect them as well. And he goes on to say, the first section of the third article gives the Supreme Court cognizance of not only the laws, but of all cases arising under the Constitution, which empowers this tribunal to decide upon the construction of the Constitution itself in the last resort. This is so extraordinary, so unprecedented an authority, that the intention investing of it must have been to put it out of the power of Congress, even by breaking through the Constitution, to compel these defaulters to restore the public treasure. So, Cal, you think these guys put together an insurmountable problem for the people to try to collect the millions that were owed to the U.S. government?
Yes, they put in layers of defense. First, you know, you can't write an ex post facto law, and then, well, if Congress says screw that, we're getting to anyway, because you guys owe us money, it would end up in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court would say, well, you can't write a law that says you could do that. So they put in multiple layers of protection for themselves. Pretty shrewd if you look at it from their point of view.
Mike, I have a question.
Please do.
Yeah. How did they justify this? This notion that, you know, all debts that are owed by the federal government are valid, but all debts owed to the federal government are not. How did they justify that? How did they try to sell that to the public?
They didn't. They didn't try to sell it to the public at any time. They just wrote it into a constitution and then told the people that if they didn't vote for this constitution, there was going to be terrible, terrible consequences, including anarchy.
Okay, okay. That makes sense. They buried it in just pretending like it wasn't there. Okay.
Well, you know, they're hoping that most of the people don't even bother to look at it, you know, which is, you know, common today. Because, you know, we have, even today, you have people who, in Congress, who have probably never read a law, have never read a proposition. Their chiefs of staff and everything do that. They're out busy campaigning and gathering in money. The members of Congress very seldom read any laws they're involved with. Members of their staff do. But here, I think, is something that we should try to play into this. Now, after the Constitution is ratified, after it's in place, after the first Congress is, and Robert Morris, the guy who is, we will read on, has probably stolen millions of dollars. He is a senator from Pennsylvania in the first Congress. Now, on August the 15th, 1789, while the Congress is debating a Bill of Rights, Robert Morris writes a letter to Francis Hopkinson. And here is what the letter says. It's very short. It says, "The House of Representatives are now playing with amendments, but if they make one truly so, I'll hang." Poor Madison got so cursedly frightened in Virginia that I believe he has dreamed amendments ever since. So what do you think, Cal? What was Robert Morris saying to Francis Hopkinson that if they make a true amendment, he will hang?
Well, if they made an amendment to the Constitution, say that, well, ex post facto laws are in effect, except may carve out an exception that the debts owed to the United States are an exception to that ex post facto, then he would hang. But it would take, you know, once the Constitution was passed, it would have taken an amendment. And, you know, good old Jimmy Madison, he was able to not have anything like that appear in his proposed Bill of Rights. Because that wouldn't be an amendment for a Bill of Rights. That would be an actual amendment to the Constitution.
Right. And all of the amendments that were proposed, including 20 by Virginia, that would have changed the structure of the Constitution, were all conveniently left out.
Yes. Yeah, it was, that was, jumping ahead to the Bill of Rights, that was what Madison was trying to do, was explaining to his fellow Federalists that we need to pass these Bill of Rights to appease the anti-Federalists and all those who are still against the Constitution. And we can do this without changing any of the powers or securities we have granted to ourselves. And that's why the Bill of Rights is just a Bill of Goods. It's not what everybody thinks it is.
Well, moving on a bit here to another subject with Sentinel, and I think this is important, is that at the time of the Constitutional Convention, several states had paid their debts to the federal government. Some had paid nothing. The great majority of the New England states had paid little to nothing. While Virginia and others had paid, well, Virginia had almost completely paid their debt. Maryland was well along in their payment of debt, too. But now Sentinel brings up something else. He says, in the present circumstances of these sections of the new Constitution would be also productive of great injustice between the respective states. The delinquent states would be exonerated from all existing demands against them on account of the great arrearages of former requisitions, as they could not be constitutionally compelled to discharge them. And as the majority of the states would be exonerated from all existing demands against them on account of the great arrearages of former requisitions, as they could not be constitutionally compelled to discharge them. And as the majority of the states are in this predicament and have an equal voice in the Senate, it would be their interest and in their power, by not only the Constitution, but by a superiority of votes, to prevent the levying of such arrearages. Besides, the Constitution, moreover, declares that all taxes, etc., shall be uniform throughout the United States, which is an additional obstacle against noticing them. Now, how many times, Cal and Dave, have we looked at that part of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, which says that all of the taxes shall be uniform throughout the United States is a good thing, when in actuality, it was put in there to protect the states who had not paid their debts to the central government, especially the New England states? So when have you ever been presented with that situation, Cal?
Well, they're trying to do it with student loan debt right now. I didn't take out a student loan, but somehow I'm supposed to be responsible for paying it.
Exactly. Exactly. So, and most people haven't even thought of this about the taxes, that once the Constitution went in effect, the states that hadn't paid their part or their share of the taxes for the war, to conduct the war that were owed to the United States, which the Federalists are screaming about the debt, and that's why we need a new Constitution, that those states are going to be exonerated from the debt, and the people in the states that have paid their debts are going to have to now be responsible for paying the debts of the other states. They will be taxed to pay twice. They will have paid the first time. Now, under the new government, under the new Constitution, they will be paying them again. So have you ever heard that discussed before, Dave?
No, I haven't. But, you know, it's just fascinating how the concept of debt is used to ram through, you know, a new Constitution. I did not know that. And it's just fascinating how we're supposed to believe this debt is real when a lot of it is simply from money created from nothing by central bankers at the stroke of a pen. There's nothing backing it up, yet people have faith in it. It's just amazing how long this scam has worked. And I just hope that people are going to see through it in the future and not play along anymore.
Well, it would be, and we could probably do a program on the comparison between the Bank of England, established in 1694, and the Bank of North America, established by Robert Morris in 1781.
There's absolutely. And you know, the Bank of England has been the model for pretty much every central bank in the world since that time.
Obviously. And who was the creator of the Bank of England in 1694?
I forget the guy's name. I'm sure you know, though.
one William Patterson. And what did Mr. Patterson say upon the creation of his bank?
Something to the effect that controlling the money, you control the country.
Well, he hits the Federal Reserve right between the eyes. He hit the Bank of North America right between the eyes. The First and Second Bank of the United States right between the eyes. And also, everything that has occurred since then with this one simple statement: we shall enjoy the interest, the payment of interest on monies we create out of nothing.
That's right. And that's what they used to sell the idea to investors. That was sort of the sales pitch.
Yes. And if we look at the Bank of North America, the First Bank of North America, which Robert Morris created in 1781, he took money that had been loaned to the United States from France. He took that gold, loaned it out to his friends and cohorts, which are mentioned here by Sentinel, loaned it out to his friends and cohorts on the condition that they buy stock in the Bank of North America. So just imagine Dave and Cal, I'm starting a bank and I send you guys the money to buy stock in my new bank. Pretty good deal.
Good work if you can find it.
That's in essence what Morris did with money he had embezzled from the United States government. He loaned it out, $270,000 in gold, to his friends and cohorts, including his assistant financier, Gouverneur Morris, no relation. Loaned them money to buy stock in the Bank of North America, and then he took that money again that he had embezzled and loaned to his friends to buy stock. He took that same money and loaned it to the U.S. government. And so the people of America were paying interest twice on that money. They were paying interest to the Bank of North America, and which went to the stockholders, and then paying interest to France on the original supply of over 400,000 in gold. So the people were getting ripped off during the revolution. And could that possibly be one of the reasons for all of the debt that they later used as an excuse to write a new constitution?
It definitely was. Because, well, the foreign debt was being paid.
Yes.
The debt and the interest on the foreign debt was being paid, yet in the writings of the Federalists, they were saying that, well, there's this massive debt and we owe all this money. It wasn't the foreign debt they owed it to, it was the domestic debt they owed to themselves.
Well,
that's where the arrears was, and that's why the same thing holds true today. I mean, you can loan money out, fiat money out, and get real money back in interest, and that's what they were doing. And guess what? If you don't have the specie or the real money to pay it back, we're going to take your land, which is worth even more than money. Great exchange of wealth right there. It was just the 2008 housing crisis back then in the 1780s.
Well, the way, stop and think about it, Cal, that deserves some exploration. If I'm a bank and I want to own a lot of property, I loan people money which the Federal Reserve created out of nothing. I loan people that money to buy property they can't afford. Then I manipulate the economy to get to the point to where they can't afford to pay for it. And then I foreclose on that property. And now all of that property that was bought with money made out of nothing, the bank now owns. But then in 2008 and 2009, it gets even better, because then they bailed out these banks to the tune of $1 trillion. They bailed out the banks who had made these loans.
They bailed out the original shareholders to the Bank of North America. It was the same scam back then as it was in 2008.
Well, they keep running the same scam over and over and over again because the people are too damn dumb to figure it out.
They're running it again. I'm starting to see, hey, get a low interest rate loan now and we'll go to the variable rate loan later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, wait a minute, we just did this.
But you've got a new crop of idiots.
Yeah, I just, wow. No, this is that high finance stuff that is alluded to in some of the writings, and stuff that makes my brain bleed when I try to read and understand what they're saying sometimes, especially Hamilton. He understood it completely inside and out. He could probably, next to one of the Rothschilds, he could probably write the book on all banking. And it's just, it's mind-numbing to try and understand what they're doing.
Well, here's another question for you, Dave and Cal. How many people who are out there taking this wonderful vaccine are going to kick the bucket in the next 5 years and owe the banks a lot of money?
What do you think that will result in, Mike?
That will result in seized property. Private property will be seized because they couldn't pay their debts and their estates are not able to pay for it.
Property and land is the source of all wealth.
Yes.
All wealth.
That's always
been. If it isn't grown, farmed, or fished, that's where everything originates. All wealth originates there. So it comes from either the land or the sea, period.
Well, all
of the land, you control all the people. Just how it works.
All of these people who will be capitulating, falling over, dying from this vaccine in the next 5 years, I promise you that will be one huge financial boon to the government and to the Federal Reserve banking system. Well, let me finish Sentinel 16. I'm almost at the end here. And again, we go back to the state debt. So this last paragraph covers it pretty well. He says, the state of Pennsylvania in such cases would have no credit for her extraordinary exertions and punctuality heretofore. He's talking about they had paid their debt, but would be taxed equally with those states which for years have not contributed anything to the common expenses of the Union. Indeed, some of the states have paid nothing since the Revolution. And he's exactly correct. And most of them were New England states, although Georgia was one of the Southern states, which had paid little to nothing toward their debt. So, Cal, you want to do a summation of Sentinel 16 for us, sir?
Sentinel's basically pointing out the fraud perpetrated by Robert Morris and cohorts in crafting the Constitution to basically extort all that money from the United States and the people.
Well, well done. Dave, you got any thoughts on Sentinel 16?
Oh, I thought that Cal just gave an excellent summary. I totally concur.
Well, let's jump into Sentinel number 17 because it follows along in the same footsteps. So Sentinel number 17, to the people of Pennsylvania, fellow citizens, in my last number, I exposed the villainous intention of the framers of the new Constitution to defraud the public out of millions lying in the hands of individuals by the construction of this system, which would, if established, cancel all debts now due to the United States. I also showed that thereby the delinquent states would be exonerated of all arrearages due by them on former requisitions of Congress, and to prove that the canceling of all public dues was premeditated in regard to individuals, I stated that the General Convention contained a number of principal public defaulters, and that these were the most influential members and chiefly instrumental in framing the new Constitution. In answer to which, the conspirators have, by bold assertions, spurious vouchers, and insufficient certificates, endeavored to exculpate one member, and insufficient certificates endeavored to exculpate one, to alleviate the weight of the charge of delinquency against another. In the face of a resolution, of Congress of the 20th of June, 1785, declaring their intention of appointing three commissioners to settle and adjust the receipts and expenditures of the late financier. The conspirators have asserted that his accounts were finally settled in November 1784, for which they pretend to have vouchers, and by a pompous display of certain resolutions of Congress respecting a particular charge of fraud against him as commercial agent to the United States, they vainly hope to divert the public attention from his great delinquency. and never accounting for the millions of public money entrusted to him in that line. Here is something that I often thought about, guys, quite often, and that was this. During that period of time, there were a multitude, normally, a multitude of libel cases by people in government when someone falsely accused them. When there were false accusations, there would be immediate libel suits. But prior to the ratification of the Constitution, which turns into a great story for those interested in history, prior to that ratification, juries would hear these libel cases. So, Cal, Dave, do you think there is a possibility that during this time frame, when Sentinel is pretty open about who he is accusing of some massive fraud, do you think there might be a reason that he was not charged with libel? Because then the case would have had to be presented before a jury?
Well, yeah, because if he'd have been charged with libel, it would have gone to court and would have, it's not libel if it's true. So they couldn't allow the truth to come out.
Well,
I mean, Samuel Bryant would have been more than willing to have gone to court over it. He wasn't liable because what he said was true.
Well, I would have been Robert Marsh, Gouverneur Marsh, Richard Peters, any of these people sitting on this vast amount of money, I wouldn't have taken him to court for libel.
No, because he would prove the truthfulness of it and expose the fraud for what they were. So they diverted the attention by just kind of rope-a-doped everybody with it, with, you know, spurious resolutions and stuff.
Well, they had their fellow Federalists in Congress coming up with all of these. And ironically, when you really get into this rabbit hole, you will find out that these people in Congress who were defending Morris were also debt holders.
Yeah, they had their Trey Gowdy's back then too.
Oh yes.
So we're going to get to the bottom of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Trey Gowdy's going to fix it all. Yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah, what happened to him? He disappeared off the table, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't. He decided not to run for office again for some reason.
Mm-hmm. And there was one point in time there. What was it? 2018. He was being considered as maybe Attorney General by Trump, and then maybe even there was mention of him being CIA director and a couple of other things, and then poof, Mr. Trey Gowdy was gone.
Yeah, he was a rising star, no doubt.
That would be an interesting story to figure out what happened to Mr. Gowdy.
He may have been threatened.
Well, you know, he was coming out with some pretty harsh stuff about Hillary, if you will remember.
Well, we all know about the Clinton body count, and so that might fit together quite well.
Well, having been a resident of Arkansas, there is a common term there, and it's called Arkanside.
Yeah, and it's not a conspiracy theory.
And it's not a conspiracy. Not a conspiracy at all. Well, continuing on with number 17 here. When we consider the immense sums of money taken up by Mr. Morris as commercial agent to import military supplies and even to trade in behalf of the United States at a time when the risk was so great that individuals would not venture their property, that all these transactions were conducted under the firm of Willing and Morris as commercial agent to import military supplies and even to trade in behalf of the United States at a time when the risk was so great that individuals did not venture their property, that all these transactions were conducted. Which afforded unrestrained scope to speculation and embezzlement of the public property by enabling Mr. Morris to throw the loss of all captures by the enemy at that hazardous period onto the public, and converting most of the safe arrivals, which were consequently very valuable, into his property. And I think that deserves some exploration. Cal, you want to jump on it? You want me to do it?
I could attempt it, but you're much better at explaining this than I am.
Well, if the United States was receiving some war supplies from other countries or what have you, wherever they were buying them, and they were captured by the British, that price, the price of those goods, was passed on to the taxpayers of the states. And so then what Morris did at his company, Willing and Morris, is when the goods did get through, which were very valuable, he converted into the property of Willing and Morris and sold them to the government. And when we add to these considerations the principles of the man, his bankrupt situation at the commencement of the late war, and the immense wealth he has dazzled the world with since, can it be thought unreasonable to conclude that the principal source of his affluence was the commercial agency of the United States during the war? Not that I would derogate from his successful ingenuity and his numerous speculations in the paper monies, Havana monopoly and job, or in the sphere of financiering. So, you know, again, Dave, you bring it out quite often, and Cal and I were talking about it before we started today, is how relevant these happenings 230 some years ago are to exactly the same thing that's happening today.
Yeah, exactly. And you also see the culture, you know, the political culture that was created at the very inception of the country. Those same, behaviors have reverberated to today. It's really quite incredible.
Mike, basically what's going on is the risk is being held by the people and the profit is going to the individual, which is what government still does today. It puts money out to make solar farms or whatever, and if it's a loss, the people have to pay the loss. If it's profitable, the company or entity that is in charge of it, they reap the rewards for it. So it spreads misery to the people and the profit to the individual. It was socialism 101 back then.
Still is. And I believe, is
and
the
they
exact
wrote the Constitution.
Yeah. It hasn't changed. The criminals wrote the Constitution. That's why Sentinel referred to it as a criminal conspiracy from the get-go.
Yeah.
And if you try to tell that today to the majority of people in this country, and they soil their underwear.
Yeah.
They can't accept the fact that this thing that they have been taught is made of divine inspiration was in fact a criminal conspiracy to rob them, their ancestors, their predecessors, and everybody else of all the money they can find. Continuing with Sentinel 17 here before we hit the top of the hour. The certificate published in behalf of General Mifflin, the quartermaster general, will not satisfy a discerning public or acquit him of the charge of delinquency, as this certificate was procured to serve an electioneering purpose upon a superficial and hasty inspection of his general account, unchecked by the accounts of his deputies, whose receipts and expenditures had not been examined, and consequently by errors, collusion between him and them, or otherwise, General Mifflin may retain a large balance in his hands. In such case, a quietus may have been thought expedient to continue his influence. For the honor of human nature, I wish to draw a veil over the situation and conduct of another weighty character whose name has given a false luster to the new Constitution and been the occasion of sullying the laurels of a Washington by inducing him to acquiesce in a system of despotism and villainy at which enlightened patriotism shudders. Now, here's where Sentinel and I disagree. He shelters Washington from any responsibility in this. Now, I don't think Washington was making money off the deal, but he sure did whatever necessary to protect these Federalists, including Hamilton, to any degree whatsoever. Any thoughts on that, guys?
I don't think Washington was directly involved in it, but he is mentioning how Washington, like I said, he was a rock star, so to speak, back then. He had the admiration of pretty much everybody, and it was almost sacrilege to say anything negative about Washington. So I think he kind of deferred away from it, but to say Washington kind of acquiesced into this despotism, they used him. He's pointing that out. You know, they included him to acquiesce into the system is what they're, is what Sentinel's saying. So they used his vanity, you know, to make him go along with their plans.
Oh, I agree. And I think Sentinel was wise enough to know that had he blasphemed Washington, he would have been totally disregarded, much as he's been totally disregarded anyway.
Yes, yes. You say something derogatory about Washington, and yeah, most people will write you off as a crackpot. Even though when the truth is known about Washington. Wow. So absolutely. I can see why you don't completely agree with what Sentinel's saying there. And, you know, I don't completely agree either, but I also understand why he's trying to bring it out that Washington's involved in this, but we're not going to talk about it because you guys aren't ready for that conversation yet.
All right, guys. We'll see you on the flip side. Come back to us with Dare to Think Out Loud.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. And there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
If you think for one second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and and bomb us, fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, welcome back, folks, to Dare to Think Out Loud here on the 28th day of May and what is a rapidly approaching a Memorial Day weekend. And Memorial Day was an origin of those nasty rebels in the South. Imagine that. Well, anyway, let's jump back in here with birthday boy Cal Robbins and our good friend who is getting ready to move northward across the equator, Dave Scorpio. And let's look at this one paragraph here in 17, which I believe tells quite the story. And that would be, and I quote, "The discovery of the intended fraud, which for magnitude and audacity is unparalleled, must open the eyes of the deluded to the true character and principles of the men who had assumed the garb of patriotism with an insidious design of enslaving and robbing their fellow citizens, of establishing those odious distinctions between the well-born and the great body of the people, of degrading the latter to the level of slaves and elevating the former to the rank of nobility." Wow. That is a scorching paragraph. What say ye, birthday boy?
Sentinel nails it with that one. It's exactly what they did. It's what they attempted to do, and it's what they have succeeded in doing.
Well, during the break there, Cal, I had a thought, which I've had on many other occasions, and really, actually, folks, I do have some at time. The thought I had was, why do we not study? Why are we not taught? Why is he seldom ever mentioned? And I mean by he, Robert Marks.
Well, I think it's because he's the epitome of the international banker working corrupt deals. And I don't think they want people to know that, the game has been played the same since the very start of the country. And, Mike, that paragraph you just read, that could have been written today. The same motivations are in play. It's really incredible.
Yeah, that could have been taken from any realistic, I won't say any newspaper or news broadcast because they're all controlled. But that, Dave, you're exactly right. That today defines exactly what we're dealing with. We could say the discovery of the intended fraud, which for magnitude and audacity is unparalleled, must open the eyes of the deluded to the true character and principles of the men who had assumed the garb of patriotism with an insidious design of enslaving and robbing their fellow citizens with the COVID-19 virus.
Exactly. That's been the cover for this kind of behavior and this kind of motivation. And we're seeing the oligarchy really wanting to be elevated to the level of a king. It's exactly the same.
Well, let's think of Fauci. Let's think of Gates. Let's think of several of these people, Biden, I won't even say what I'm thinking about the vice president. But let's talk about that. And is this not exactly what they're doing here when we think about the wealthy and the well-born here, the elite, of establishing those odious distinctions between the well-born and the great body of the people, of degrading the latter to the level of slaves and enslaving the former to the rank of nobility? And I thought about that so many times, even today, and I watch like social media. And it's sad when you see people who will tell you how corrupt the government is and how they're true blue patriots and they're fighting for this and they're fighting for that. And then they will use a politician to make a point. Well, look what so-and-so said, you know.
Yeah, and look how they've got, you know, the vast majority of people walking around with a mask on. And they have the audacity to tell them, well, your job is not essential. You are not essential. And that's a very degrading thing, putting you in the category of a slave between the two of those things.
Well, here was one thing I wanted to discuss. We're jumping subject here for a second, but I really wanted to talk about this. What have you guys seen, if anything, among the, Trump forever people? What have you seen, any reaction to what Trump said when he said he was the father of the vaccine and he should be given credit for it, and the slowing down of Johnson & Johnson, just because he didn't say this, but to slow down Johnson & Johnson was a huge mistake, and that he's the person who pushed this through the CDC and all of this other stuff. What are the reaction of these always Trumpers to this? Have you seen any at all, guys?
Blissful ignorance and denial.
Totally.
Well, I was just waiting for somebody to say he was playing 4D chess.
Yeah.
Mike, that paragraph, it's my birthday today, so I get to reflect back on my
adulthood. Yes, sir, you do.
That paragraph fits every regime, administration, since my adulthood, and I turned 18 when Reagan became president, basically. So, yeah, ever since Reagan, that paragraph fits perfectly every regime since Reagan, since I kind of really became aware of politics. But in looking through history, that fits every regime, even Jefferson.
Well, that's true. Do you think that Samuel Bryan realized how prophetic he was being?
He's so prophetic, Dad. I don't think even he realized it, but he was very prophetic in this.
Well, continuing on with old number 17, because we're going to get to a point here where Cal gets to talk about one of his favorites. The citizens of this state, which is in advance in its payments to the federal treasury, whilst some of the others have not paid a farthing since the war, ought in a peculiar manner to resent the intended imposition and make its authors experience their just resentment. It is incumbent upon them in a particular manner to exert themselves to frustrate the measures of the conspirators and set an example to those parts of the Union who have not enjoyed the blessing of a free press on this occasion, but are still enveloped in the darkness of delusion and enthralled by the fascination of names. Could it have been supposed 7 years ago that before the wounds received in the late conflict for liberty were scarcely healed, a postmaster general and his deputies would have had the daring presumption to convert an establishment intended to promote and secure the public welfare into an engine of despotism by suppressing all those newspapers that contain the essays of patriotism and real intelligence, and propagating instead thereof falsehoods and delusion. Such a supposition at the time would have been treated as chimerical. But how must our indignation rise when we find this flagitious practice is preserved in after being publicly detected? Now, guys, how fitting is that to today when we're talking about suppressing the newspapers? What are they doing with the people trying to tell the truth about this virus and this vaccine? Is this not also absolutely relevant to what's happening in this country today?
They're doing the same thing.
Mike, we're seeing an unprecedented push to get the vaccine in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we've been told that that is the only solution. There's no other treatments or medicine that work. The vaccine's the only thing you can do. And never mind that it's an experimental medical procedure that we don't really know what it's going to do. But hey, come get it and do it now. And you might even become a millionaire through the various vaccine lotteries they're having now.
Well, here's the clause in that phrase that really gets to me. When I think about Facebook, I think about YouTube, I think about all these others, it says, an establishment intended to promote and secure the public welfare has been turned into an engine of despotism by suppressing all those newspapers that contain the essays of patriotism and real intelligence, and propagating instead thereof falsehoods and delusion. That is right today, 2021. So, continuing on talking about this, and this is also relevant to today, must not the bribe from the conspirators be very great to compensate the Postmaster General and his deputies for the loss of character and infamy consequent upon such conduct, and for the danger they incur of being impeached and turned out of office? Well, that's not about to happen today. The scurrilous, here we go, Cal, you ready for this, buddy? The scurrilous attack of the little fiddler upon Mr. Workman of the university, on a suspicion, perhaps unfounded, of his being the author of a series of essays under the signature of Philadelphonesis, is characteristic of the man. He has ever been the base parasite and tool of the wealthy and the great, at the expense of truth, honor, friendship, treachery to benefactors, nay, to the nearest relatives. All have been sacrificed by him at the shrine of the great. He ought, however, to have avoided a contrast with so worthy and highly respected a character as Mr. Workman, who had an equal right with himself to offer his sentiments on the new Constitution. And if he viewed it as a system of despotism and had talents to unfold its nature and tendency, he deserves the thanks of every patriotic American. If he has exerted them under the character of Philadelphonesis, his not being above 4 years in the country can be no objection. The celebrated Thomas Paine wrote his Common Sense before he had been 2 years in America, which was not the less useful or acceptable upon that account. The public have nothing to do with the author of a piece. It is the merits of the writing that are alone to be considered. Mr. Workman, prior to his coming to America, was a professor in an eminent academy in Dublin. Little Francis should have been cautious in giving provocation, for insignificance alone could have preserved him the smallest remnant of character. I hope he will take the hint, or such a scene will be laid open as will disgrace even his patrons. The suit of clothes and the quarter cask of wine will not be forgot. Now, as I look at these guys, one of the things I think of so often is I wish these guys who wrote these things would have been dumber and would have written this stuff in the language that your public fool system, Bubus Americanus, would be able to understand. Because some of these guys, especially Sentinel, it's almost prose to read his writing. So, Anyway, Cal, you want to take away the fiddler and Mr. Workman and talk about that, please, sir?
Well, the fiddler, who was a Federalist, is none other than Francis Hopkinson, and he was a signer of the Declaration of Independence.
Cal, wait just a second. Isn't that the same Francis Hopkinson that Robert Morris wrote to and said, hey, if they pass the Wright Amendment, I'll hang?
Yes, the same one.
I just wanted to
which is why Francis Hopkinson is probably another he was writing about Philoponesis, who was actually Benjamin Workman, who was a university professor from Dublin, Ireland, and as a professor was a professor at the University of Philadelphia, who spoke out against the Constitution. And let's just say that Philoponesis, he did not hold back. He where Sentinel wanted to, put a veil over Washington and all that, not Benjamin Workman. He just called them all out just as he saw them. You know, he had that straight up Irish, I'm going to say it how it is thing. And he caught the ire and attention of Francis Hopkins. And it was quite the verbal battle the two had between them. We could do a whole radio show on Philoponesis.
Well, why don't you read that passage that you sent to me for the folks? I think that would be most interesting.
Okay, hold on a second. This comes from Philoponesis 3, his third essay. And he says, it was a common saying among many sensible men in Great Britain and Ireland in the time of the war that they doubted whether the great men of America, who had been an active part in favor of independence, were influenced by pure patriotism. That is, that it was not the love of their country they had so much at heart as their own private interest, that a thirst after dominion and power, and not to protect the oppressed from the oppressor, was the great operative principle that induced these men to oppose Britain so strenuously. The seemingly illiberal sentiment was, however, generally denied by the well-hearted and unsuspecting friends of American liberty in Europe, who could not suppose that men who would engage in so noble a cause through such base motives. But alas, the truth of the sentiment is now indisputably confirmed. Facts are stubborn things, and these set the matter beyond controversy. The new Constitution and the conduct of its despotic advocates show that these men's doubts were really well-founded. Unparalleled duplicity, that men should oppose tyranny under a pretense of patriotism, that they might themselves become the tyrants. How does such villainy disgrace human nature? Ah, my fellow citizens, you have been strangely deceived indeed. When the wealthy of your own country assist you to expel the foreign tyrant, only with a view to substitute themselves in his stead. So he's calling out the motives of what we now call the Federalists. They weren't truly after independence for the sake of liberty. They were after independence so that they could control the people themselves. They wanted to become their own king, their own tyrants. And he's calling him out, and that really, to speak so honestly about the Federalists kind of really upset the Federalists. And they couldn't attack back against what he was saying, but they could go after his character. And that's what Francis Hopkins did, so much so as to try to get him actually expelled as a professor at the university.
Oh, you make attacks on them, then try to take away their jobs if they don't agree with the propaganda. Is that happening today?
Exactly. The parallels are uncanny to what's going on today to what happened back then.
Hey, Dave, aren't you a musician?
Yes.
Well, I want to task you with writing a new national anthem.
Okay. And
I would like for you to base it on that old song by Waylon Jennings. Now, what we will do is for the American public is we will change just a couple of words, and it will be, my heroes have always been criminals, and they still are today.
Right.
Now, my heroes have always been pirates.
Yeah, wouldn't that make a great new national anthem?
It sure would, absolutely.
And then we wouldn't have to end it in a lie, would we? The home of the free and the land of the brave.
Yeah.
Land of the free and the home of the brave. Oh, yeah. What a joke. Yeah, I don't know how anything could be much more ridiculous than that. Guys, now that we've gone through Sentinel and gone through 16 and 17, I approached a question yesterday on Eurofolk Radio with Jim Ram. And I brought out a question I would like to see dissected. But unfortunately, it didn't get so handled yesterday. Here is my question. Now, guys, if it can be proved beyond a shadow of a doubt by any of these audits, and I even read an audit last night in a place, I forgot where exactly where it was, but it was an audit that, and it was a local election or a county election or something, that the votes had been changed to profit the Republicans locally when they were examining the election results in the 2020 presidential election. So here is my question. I would like to hear both you gentlemen expound on this. If the election of 2020 is proved to be fraudulent at any level, what is the constitutional method of handling that election?
There is no constitutional method.
The
electors have spoken. The only way maybe it could be done would be have the whole election thrown into the House of Representatives.
Dave, you have any thoughts on that?
No, keep going.
Well, it's to me, it is quite the question, because almost everyone who considers themselves to be a conservative Christian Republican believes unequivocally that if it's proved to be fraud, Trump's the president. How can there be a victor in a fraudulent election is my question.
Well, yeah, and the evidence for that is mounting every day. It's really quite shocking. And I think that doesn't only include the presidential election. I think there's 10 to 15 to 20 state governors that I think were put in there fraudulently.
And maybe U.S. senators and members of the House of Representatives as well?
Oh, absolutely. You have to wonder how John McCain got elected for, 20-something years, 30 years?
The fraud is nothing new. It's just more obvious this time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
If people really think their vote mattered, they wouldn't, if votes really made a difference, you wouldn't be allowed to do it.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that is true.
The powers of be are going to put into place people they want in certain key positions to control the government, no matter what the people think, say, or do.
Well, Cal, you bring forth another question. I'm just full of them today. And this question would be, if we know and we admit that this government is a criminal operation, and let me preface that by saying I believe that at some point in time in recorded history that the United States government will go down as the largest criminal enterprise in the history of man. And if we admit that, and then vote, do we not make ourselves criminals?
A co-conspirator in the crime.
At least a co-conspirator.
Yeah. No, if you know that 9/11 was an inside job, that makes the government criminal. And if you still vote, that makes you a co-conspirator in the criminality of the government. Period.
Well, that's right. And the scope of the crimes are so vast that no one's ever been punished within any organization regarding this. You go all the way back to the Kennedy assassination. None of the conspirators were ever charged, and it's just been open season, you know?
Well, here's a point, and I've asked this point, and I could ask it of a lot of people. We know that lies were perpetrated to put us into World War I, to put us into World War II, to put us into Korea, to put us into Vietnam. Considering all of that vast number of lies, provable lies, why would anyone today join the military?
Cognitive dishonest. It's public education system.
Well, I believe that the wonderful flybys and all of the honor of veterans on the television, I believe that has a great effect too.
It's the propaganda. I mean, it's the only thing that, you know, propaganda and, you know, being able to vote is the only thing that keeps people from understanding what a criminal organization this government actually is.
Well, people have been, you know, we have been at war now for almost 20 years. War on terror. You know, a war on a tactic, something that you can never win. You can never win that war. And that was by design. So we've been at war for 20 years, and we've had all of these people who have been out there supposedly fighting for our freedom. Fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them over here. Well, if they've been fighting for our freedom for 20 years, and we have a whole lot less freedoms than we did 20 years ago, why are these people still heroes?
Well, that's part of the patriot mythology, Mike, that goes all the way back to the Constitution, I believe.
Well, I was just thinking, if I hired you, Dave, to come over to my house and get rid of all of the vermin around my house, and I paid you to do it for 20 years, and when you finished, I had many more vermin than I did when you started, how would I justify calling you a hero?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's almost like they were trying to create more problems by these wars rather than solve anything, leaving the countries in far worse shape. And essentially, I think destabilization is what part of the goal was.
Well, I've got another question. Imagine that. Very few you can go through and you can check. And very few of the members of Congress vote constitutionally, as flawed as it is. Less than half of the number of members of Congress vote constitutionally at least 50% of the time. So that would tell us that at least 50% of our laws are totally unconstitutional. And in this country, we have the people who are called law enforcement. So at least half of the laws they are enforcing are unconstitutional. Why are they heroes?
No, Mike, you're asking rational, thoughtful questions to a public that operates on emotion and not daring to think, that don't operate on rational thought. They operate on emotion. They've been indoctrinated and propagandized into that, but they've allowed themselves to be it. I mean, the people bear the responsibility for it. Each individual bears the responsibility for their outlook on life and their fellow man and their obedience to tyrannical laws.
Well, I've got another question. I know you can't imagine that, but I do. If it is true that we must fight them over there so we don't have to fight them over here, why are our borders left unprotected and we are allowing hundreds of thousands of military-age men from the countries where our military is currently engaged to immigrate into our country?
Because the whole narrative of terrorists was created by the United States government. Those terrorists, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, the Mujahideen, they were all created by the United States. The government knows exactly who they are, where they are, and what they're doing. If you want to eliminate terrorism, then target Langley, period.
Well, Mike, and it also just shows how disingenuous the government is in general. If they were serious about the so-called terrorism, they would close the borders. But of course, they want open borders to create the North American Union and to sort of repopulate the country for this new world order. You know, so it just shows there's a secret agenda at work, and there's a lot of disconnect when you try to think that the government is operating from some kind of rational and standpoint of helping the general population.
Well, Dave, I would like to convert that into an actual true life experience for me. The year was 2005. The month was April. I was one of the leaders of what was known as the Minutemen Project. I was the New Mexico director of the Minutemen Project, and we were on the border in Arizona. And we had a farmer come to us, a farmer rancher, actually. And his name was Johnson, and he invited us to come out on his property, which we had to do. We were not allowed to go on any private property without permission or a request. And Mr. Johnson invited us out, and he showed us a route that was readily used across his property by illegals coming into the country. And he said, if you guys are really trying to look at some of these illegals coming in, you need to come out here to my place and you need to sit out here and I'll show you exactly where to look, because he said it's like a highway through my property. So we went out there, but one of the things that was in our protocol was I contacted a sergeant that I knew with the Border Patrol. And I talked with him and I said, hey, this is where we're going. And I said, do you know the property? He said, yes. I said, we are going to be out there for two or three nights. There were three of us. We're going to be out here, and we are going to be checking out this pathway that is being used, according to Mr. Johnson. He said, great. He said, here. He said, here's my cell phone number. He said, you guys have cell phones. He said, see if you got service out there. And he said, if you spot anything, give me a call. And I said, okay, we will. Well, ironically, two nights later, at about 2 o'clock in the morning, we saw movement down in the valley below us. And we saw, with some infrared equipment that one of the gentlemen happened to have that I was with, we saw that we had a good number of people moving across the border into Arizona. So I went back to my car, or truck, pickup truck, and I called the gentleman from the Border Patrol, and he said, hey, he said, I'll be out in just a few minutes. He said, I will flash my lights as I'm coming down the road. So you guys will know. I know you guys are armed. I don't want to get shot. And we said, okay, that's fine. So he comes out. He looks and sees what we have seen, and some of these people have gone into a layup position. We presumed to rest for a while before they moved on, and we counted probably 25 to 30. So he said, okay, he said, I'm calling in some people. He said, I'm going to have an air support come in behind them to stop them from going back across the border. I'm going to bring some other people in from our side, and we will move on them. Once we do that, he said, according to your protocol, you have to leave us. And we said, okay, no problem. We're not going to stay around because, you know, I understand their liability that if something happened. So anyway, he comes in. Suddenly the helicopter comes over the ridge with a high beam spotlight. Spotlights the ones on the ground. The Border Patrol men start moving in, and they're yelling, a sentence, a sentence, a sentence. And of course, Dave, you know what that means. And so, but none of them sat down. And we noticed that. Of course, then it was we had to leave by our protocol. And we left. So I think it was probably, you know, maybe 3-4 nights later, and we were in Casa Grande. Anyway, we were in a local town there, and we went into Bennigan's, and several of us were eating, and I saw the sergeant come in who had come to us, and I invited him over to our table. And he came over, sat down, said hello to everyone, and he was going to said, well, would you like to eat with us? He said, sure. So during the course of conversation, he said, well, I really want to thank you guys for your finding those people. He said, we had 27. He said, two got away. We're not sure what happened to them, but he said, we had 27 OTMs. And I said, you're going to have to help me out a little bit here. I said, what's an OTM? He said, we had 27 other than Mexican. And I said, well, I noticed they didn't understand Spanish, which I thought was a little unusual. And he said, well, he said, you know, we had to go to the University of Arizona to get a linguist to come down to where we could figure out where these people were from. And I said, well, where was it? And he said, Iran. And I said, so we had 27 people with backpacks from Iran coming across our southern border. And he said, yep, that's it. And I said, well, what happened to them? He said, well, he said, you're probably going to find this a little hard to believe, but we had to take them to Tucson, to federal court, to where they were arraigned for entering the country illegally and released on their own recognizance. And I said, you jest, surely you jest. I said, how many of them actually show up for their hearings? And he said, you're kidding, right? So I said, what you're telling me is that when OTMs come into this country, they are released on their own recognizance. So entering our country illegally actually works. And he said, well, on paper it doesn't, but he said, in actuality it does. So there were 27 people released into the United States. We're not sure what happened to the other two. There were 27 people who were Iranians who were released into the United States. Now, at that time, we were in Iraq in 2005 fighting a war. Why do you think those 27 people from Iran came to the United States, gentlemen? Pick strawberries?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Obviously.
Well, that to me, I think that probably hit me right between the eyes more than anything, is that those who would come into this, and if what if they had been Iraqis? Would it have made any difference? And yet we're allowing those people into the country. Again, that I'll go back to my question again. If it is true that we must fight them over there so we don't have to fight them over here, why are our borders left unprotected and we are allowing hundreds of thousands of military-age men from the countries where our military is presently engaged to immigrate into our country? How does that make any sense whatsoever, gentlemen?
Well, it only makes sense when you see that the entire facade of what we're told of the government is up to is a complete lie, and that they're working from a covert agenda.
That would be my question would be, why are we over there in Iraq or Iran to begin with?
Absolutely. I totally agree with that, and I certainly wasn't trying to justify that in any way, Cal. I was just trying to point ridiculousness.
But what, I mean, it's like, okay, what really makes Iran our enemy, other than the government? So
they have oil.
Yeah. they have oil and they've resisted the Federal Reserve, the banksters. Mm-hmm. Let's see. That makes them my enemy. No, it makes them the government's enemy. I'm still trying to figure out what makes Iran my enemy, other than the government told me so.
Well, here, let me kind of break this down and make it a little bit simpler for Bubas, and you guys grade me on my effort. If you knew a man who left his home and family to travel thousands of miles from his home to engage an alleged enemy, but he left the doors to his home unlocked, his family unarmed, and unfettered access to his loved ones by those who sought to harm or kill them, on what level would you rate his intelligence?
Oh, I don't dare answer that question. I was about to say Army intelligence.
But did I draw? Is my analogy flawed?
No, that's what's happening. The purpose of the military is for defense, not offense. And the United States, in its arrogance, is engaged in offense around the globe. Or I should say the American Empire, the federal empire. It's not a republic, it's an empire.
Well, here's a question I also want to ask you, gentlemen. Have you, either of you, ever asked anyone a question which made them angry?
Yeah, all the time.
Dave?
Oh, yeah, I agree. Yeah, all the time, definitely.
Okay, here's my question. Was it the question that made them angry or the answer they had to face?
The answer they had to face. They had to face the cognitive dishonest. Because the answer to the question would have broke down their whole reality of their own personal reality, how they viewed reality, because it would defy their whole makeup and view of the world. They can't face that. It's like a change of personality in somebody.
All right. Well, we've got about 10, 15 minutes left. I want to throw another couple of questions out there since we have this opportunity. And here's another question for you. When, not if, an unconstitutional law is passed banning the ownership and possession of the means to protect ourselves and our families, who will come to enforce those unlawful, tyrannical edicts?
When the ones in uniform sworn to uphold those laws.
Well, when they come to seize your means of protecting you and your family, will they still be heroes?
That would mean they'd have to be heroes in the first place, in my mind. But to Bubas, I don't know.
But we've got
Bubba shocks the heck out of me on what they will accept and do and the mental gymnastics they are capable of. I am constantly amazed at the mental gymnastics Bubba is capable of.
Okay, we've got 100 years of unconstitutional gun laws. Any law about weapons is unconstitutional according to the Second Amendment. So for 100 years, who has been enforcing those unconstitutional anti-Second Amendment laws? Why are we still calling them heroes? And another question, where in the Second Amendment can be found the provision that one must participate in government-mandated training and able to exercise a right which was granted by your creator?
It's not.
Where in the Second Amendment can be found the provision that one must pay a fee to the government in order to exercise their creator-endowed right?
Again, it's not.
Okay, another question. Why is there a large marble monument in this country's capital city which honors a man who destroyed the tenets of the Declaration of Independence, consent of the governed, killed hundreds of thousands to create a stronger central government, destroyed states' rights, established the first income tax, and created the IRS, which are all destructive of our Creator-granted rights. Why do we have a monument to him? Why do we have a monument to people who destroyed liberty instead of those who defended it? Where is the marble monument to Patrick Henry stating, "As for me, I know not what course others may take, but give me liberty or give me death"? I said that out of order, but it's still the same thing.
These are questions everybody needs to go through in their own mind, if liberty is truly their objective.
I've got another question. Imagine that. If churches in this country are subject to the payment of taxes, can there ever actually be a true separation of church and state?
No.
Could this, the payment of taxes, be the reason so many churches today preach loyalty to Caesar above loyalty and observance of our Creator-endowed unalienable rights?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that one.
That's the reason why it's that they are that way.
Well, here's a good question for you. I hope it's a good question. If the powers within our government used Operation Paperclip, to staff the Central Intelligence Agency with former Nazi SS leaders at its beginning in 1947, should we be surprised today that the CIA acts like the Gestapo did in Germany in the 1930s and 40s?
No.
And now for the one that will probably make me a whole bunch of new fans. The Standards Committee of the Confederate Congress said this when designating the St. Andrew's Cross as the Confederate battle flag. Quote, "This flag should be a token of the humble acknowledgement of God and to be a public testimony to the world that our trust is in the Lord our God," unquote. Is the banning of this flag by many in this country an attack on alleged racism, or is it a surreptitious attack on Christianity?
Well, that's a good question, Mike. Unfortunately, most people don't have any idea what the history is or what the flag may have represented. So when you have ignorant people responding purely through emotion, it's hard to see through the fog, so to speak.
Well, what is more important to people, guys? The individual and the inalienable rights of that individual, their children and grandchildren, or the worship of a new deity called government in regards to all of that government's rules, regulations, and laws which are in direct conflict with our Creator-endowed unalienable rights?
Unfortunately, the people have chosen government over liberty.
So that goes back and answers the question about how can we have so many churches and such a corrupt government?
Yep.
Well, we're down to, I'm going to get each one of you guys to give us a synopsis, but I would like to, please listen in to Operation Scorpio tomorrow with Dave and his roundtable. Catch my program along with Daryl Wayne and Dave on Sunday evenings called Addicted to Your Own Destruction. And folks, please go to, if you have access to Telegram, if you don't get it, come on to Telegram and join into the Rebel Madman. Join us and you will be asked a lot more questions that will make you uncomfortable answering them. And let me tell you that the Rebel Madman Telegram channel is not a channel for wussies. You either have the courage to face it or you don't. So I would like to invite people to join that. Also, there's one there called Constitutional Fraud, which I'm a part of as well. And that's also on the Telegram channel. Cal, would you like to draw a synopsis for us of our class today?
Well, first, I want to thank you for once again bringing true history to the forefront with the writings of Sentinel and bringing attention and focus back to the writings of the Federalists, because it did play, what the Federalists had to say did play a role in the history of the creation of this government, whether one likes to admit it or not. And their words have relevance and prevalence into everything that's happened and is happening today. So I want to thank you for bringing back what could be described as that great debate, back to trying to bring it back to the forefront in the pursuit of the liberty of the people. Yeah. So you are, once again, as Patrick Henry was, you are truly a sentinel of liberty. So thank you, Mike.
Well, anytime, Cal, I'm humbled. Anytime that I'm mentioned in the same book with Patrick Henry, it's humbling indeed. He has the spirit I would always aspire to have. Thank you for that. And again, happy birthday, my friend.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
Dave, you have a synopsis for us?
Sure. You know, what I would say is that one common thread in your research and why I think it's so important is that it's really showing this creation of a political culture through deception and the powers of central banking is what really founded the Constitution as we know it. And this exact same culture of corruption and covert power has been handed down with each subsequent administration all the way to today. And it answers so many questions as to what is going on and how the system really works.
Well, thank you for that, Dave. And you bring to the front piece of what I have been asked so many times by people in so many locations. Why do you even care about this old stuff? And believe me, I've heard that question a lot more times than I have heard teach me more. So people, Emma Goldman was right. Americans do not want to be free. They want to be comfortable. And if being a slave is comfortable, they'll take it. But I remind you that this socialism is very comfortable right up until the time they slam the gulag door. Or until they put a bullet in the back of your head or, you know, into your arm with a smaller device.
Yeah, good point. Very good point.
So, you know, what was that gas that Hitler supposedly used? Xylocon? What was that?
Cyclone B, yeah.
Yeah. What's the difference in that and vaccination A?
One just takes longer to take effect. The results aren't instant.
And they have people lining up willingly to take it by using deception and fear. That's the really incredible part.
Well, you know, what better way to get population control than to have the people participate in their own suicide?
Exactly.
Well, guys, I guess we're right. I guess we're dinosaurs. But I can't thank you two enough. Thanks. Enjoy your birthday, Cal and Dave. Thanks. And I look forward to your roundtable tomorrow, my friend.
Okay. Thank you. And great show, Mike, as always. And Cal, you add so many insights to the show. It's been great getting to know you. And happy birthday, man.
Thanks, Dave.
Well, good luck on getting all of that property taken care of down there and getting everything done, because we're looking forward to meeting you and getting you up here, my friend.
Mike, I appreciate you bringing that up and reminding me to stay on track. I really do appreciate that.
All right, guys. Well, everyone have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. Stay safe out there, unless you happen to be one of the statists, and then I really don't give a damn. Have a great weekend, everyone.
you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Zero X E 0513. We talk about this.